I feel like I can do it all. You know, I did so much when I was at Buffalo, whether if it was, you know, catching deep balls or, you know, lead blocking through the C gap. I mean, I feel like I'm very versatile and can, you know, play any type of game that need to be played whichever week.
Here's Allen, taken to the right, going to the end zone. And who else? Gabe Davis with the touchdown catch on the opening drive.
You know, I think it's going to go very well. And, you know, I plan to have a long career. You know, I think I got a good 5 or 6 more years in me. So I don't plan on stopping anytime soon.
I done did it before, going to teams that didn't really have it all the way together. Then, like, early years, a new head coach and stuff. And you got to deal with just that early year. But, like, I know this team, you know, is moving forward, moving up.
1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Dylan Denmark.
All right, good morning, everybody. Halfway through, making our way through another week of Jaguar football, inching our way towards the NFL draft. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Dylan Denmark here with you this morning. Johnny O will stop by in hour number two. Tony, good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
Tony, who's the most impressive athlete you've met doing your job, or the one, it doesn't have to be the most impressive, like, record setter, just somebody that you thought, that's really cool, I get to meet that person.
But, you know, like Barry Sanders,
yeah.
You know, like that kind
I knew
of
who you met.
Yeah.
It's like Barry.
I didn't get to meet Barry Bonds.
Let me explain. I'm not talking about the fictional TV hitman.
Yeah, no. Something. It was something at the Super Bowl somewhere.
I'm sure, yeah.
That group of guys that we've had the opportunity to talk to. You know, we get to do a post-game show every Sunday with Fred Taylor. I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, Fred's awesome, right?
Yeah.
And we do. I just was curious because I don't want to take it for granted ever. You know,
right.
I just heard Pockets in there as David Garrard's spot was coming on, and Pockets knew exactly what he was going to say and was kind of like doing the little copy.
I'm David Garrard here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, Pockets is doing his David Garrard.
Yeah.
And I got to think Pockets is a young guy. So I said, Dylan, who's the most impressive athlete you've gotten to meet, like kind of through this job or whatever?
Yeah.
He goes, Kelvin Brown. I'm like, who is this? And so he's on your track team, Pockets?
Yeah, I thought you meant who I've coached because I was doing something.
Yeah,
I missed that one word.
You did miss something because then I said, no. Like the most impressive
athlete you've met.
He goes, what, at any track meet? Like, where did track meet come into this?
Yeah, I can remember having grown up a Giants fan when Lawrence Taylor showed up on Radio Row. I made it a point to at least go over and shake his hand.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
he's been around two or three times
probably.
I've seen him there. I don't know if I've ever sat down with LT.
I haven't. No, I just went over and shook his hand and said, nice to meet you.
No, I got you.
Greatest
got
of
you.
All time. Kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. No, and maybe Kelvin Brown will go down as one of the greatest track athletes of all time, Pockets. He got a nice shout-out from you this morning. So he runs the 100, the 200, and the 4x100, you're telling me,
yeah,
right?
He's got a top 15 time in the state in the 100 right now in 2A. He runs a 10.9. Pretty good.
Doesn't want to do the long jump?
I guess not. I've been trying to, but he don't want to do it.
Pretty much all sprinters should be decent at the long jump.
Yeah, because it's all about speed.
Yeah, it's just a big speed thing and the whole thing. All right, anyway, good for him. You know, how about that? Pockets then did – he go, oh, once he realized what the question was, you went with the Trinity over at UF,
Gators,
right?
Yeah.
You went with the –
Yeah, I've never met – I mean, I've met Leon, obviously, Garrard.
Don't
Jimmy
be
Smith.
No.
But
don't
I
be
mean,
trying
like,
to, don't
but
be
I mean,
trying
the guys
backtrack
that,
now.
The guys that I've watched, like, and the guys that I idolized growing up. Like,
I got you. All right.
Not so much in the NFL, like, that I've been around. Like, I haven't been around Freddie T yet.
He's like, Garrard's cool. Garrard's pretty cool. Pockets went with Spurrier, Tebow, and Billy Donovan, and that's fine.
Yeah.
That's totally fine, right? Like, I get it. You're a young guy. Went to the University of Florida. Those are big-time people to you. And Kelvin Brown, you know, rounds out the Mount Rushmore of Pockets' experience.
Top four.
Just curious, really, with the whole thing. I guess for me, like, I wasn't like a Joe Namath fan. You know, just that whole Joe Namath thing was kind of surreal because you don't see him very often.
Yeah.
You know? And that was kind of cool. But
he's never there.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't tell you who the number one guy. I met so many great ones over the years. Kind of neat.
That's unbelievable.
You know who I haven't met? Kelvin Brown. Apparently need to, you know,
can make it happen.
Up and comer in the track world. Well, so does he know that I support the team with the free merchandise?
I don't think he does.
So I do rep the Baldwin track squad every once in a while.
You wore that merch yet?
Absolutely. I wore it in like the very next work day we had, man. Oh,
that's right.
Yeah. And it didn't go through the laundry site. Do you wash a shirt before you wear it?
No.
My wife asks me all the time, do you want me to wash it? I'm like, why would I wash it? I just bought it.
I want to wear it. That's why I bought it.
Yeah. It's right out in the box, honey.
Yeah. That may be something you're supposed to do, but it's not
something
I do.
Look, I don't know what's crawling all over it in wherever I purchased that from, but no, I don't need you to wash it. I'm fine with that. That's me. You know, like, I don't know. Maybe we need to run a poll today, Tony. Do you wash your clothes before you wear them, after you buy them new? I certainly don't. Mm-hmm. Today we are running a poll, and it's just a simple either-or binary choice for you on the Aiyuk front. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, and honestly, I thought this might go a little bit different, and it's early still, but a lot of the immediate reaction I got when I said I would not give the 17th pick in the draft for Brandon Aiyuk straight up, knowing I'm going to have to pay him. The rumor was he wants at least $27.5 million. Mm-hmm. But basically, put it this way. Let's call it $5 million more than Calvin Ridley got per year on average. I'm not saying he's not a better player than that, but with Calvin Ridley, you didn't, you know, at least from the Jags' perspective, they wanted to make sure if we're going to sign him to that, we're already locked into giving up that third-round pick. We're not going to give up the extra pick. It's the pick plus the compensation.
It's not cheap.
It's not cheap. Yeah. You would have done it. You would do it right now. And I think that I think both sides of this are defensible.
I do, too.
I'm clearly on one side of it. You're clearly on the other. But I do understand the perspective of, hey, man, we don't know what we're going to get with 17. But I don't – like, you know, like Trent Baalke says, basically, I'm not going to live in fear, not going to live in the past, you know, worry about mistakes of the past. They don't bother me. I don't know about that. I don't know if that's the right. You've got to at least recognize if the mistakes in the past are part. Well, if it's part of a pattern.
Yeah.
Like, are you making similar mistakes over and over that are leading to bad results repeatedly? Then you should worry about it. You need to worry about it. But, like, to me, I don't go and look and go, oh, man, I didn't pick a good guy at this spot last time, or I didn't get this, or I've done a good job selecting receiver in the draft.
It's not on the golf course pulling the 3-iron.
No.
Like, I never hit this right. Like, get that out of your head.
It's like,
man.
Hey, the next one I pick is going to be, I'm going to hit that thing pure.
Yeah.
I'm going to hit it to 5 feet, right?
Trust
like
the process.
You know, or that equivalence, you know? And if you're a GM in the National Football League, I don't think any of them are gun shy when it comes to selecting. They're probably overconfident in the other direction.
I would hope so.
You would hope, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's human nature. I'm sure some people start to question.
You'd have
themselves.
To be a basket case. Like, if every mistake you made as an NFL GM
how
bothered
you
to that point, like, eventually you'd just be like, put me in the asylum. I'm done.
Right? So, like, when you say, well, you know, Baalke's just going to screw up that pick. So I get it from your standpoint. You're looking at it like, hey, that's how I feel. He may not make a good selection anyway. This way we at least know we're getting a good player. But I'd like to hold out the hope that you could get that good player anyway.
Sure.
And get him locked up for a reasonable amount of money. I mean, reasonable, you know, in NFL terms, right? That you know you're going to be, at 17th pick, you're going to be paying that guy considerably less for 4 years than Aiyuk will expect to get for one, a single year, you know? And what does that do with your ability to hold on to some of your other ascending assets, Tyson Campbell, Josh Allen in terms of a long-term deal? And I know he's going to lower his cap hit if he signs a long-term deal. He will initially. Mm-hmm. But that money is still going to come due. And,
yeah, 32 is going to be 32 when it happens.
Eventually it is. And Trevor Lawrence is going to be getting a huge chunk of your salary cap. And I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying these are factors that you have to consider. So we're asking you today, knowing that Aiyuk would likely want a contract that makes him one of the highest paid receivers in the NFL. If you want a number, put it at $28 million a year. Okay, mm-hmm. Ridley got 23. I've seen 27.5 is where it's going to start for Aiyuk in his mind. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you don't think he's worth that. That seems to be what he's seeking. I think that's a fair number based on his age and his production that he's gotten, that I would expect him to get that on the open market. So this wouldn't be the open market, but if you were trading for a guy in this circumstance, like the trade for Ridley was different because, A, it was conditional. You didn't know. What if Ridley never made, you know, if he was a screw up and he never got it together, you would have ended up, that third would have been a fourth, right? It was based on playing time. So that investment was not nearly as great. And you were willing, from the Trent Baalke perspective, he was willing at least to roll the dice on getting Ridley in here for a year at that cost, seeing what would happen. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't give up the 17th pick in the draft and roll the dice that this guy is going to sign with you next year. And you're not going to sit there, Tone, clearly, and go, well, we got the franchise tag. Well, you might need that for Tyson Kay, any number of guys, right? Yeah. Who knows if you're going to get extensions done with these guys. So 17th pick plus a top of the market contract, or just hang on to what you got right now, knowing what you have at the moment. And look, I didn't even include Zay Jones in this proposed trade. I'm just talking about the pick, because Zay is likely not part of the roster if this trade goes down, right? So whether you include him going to San Francisco, if they treat that as something of value that they're getting, good, right? So I'm going to presume that he won't be a part of the team if this situation were to occur. So, yes, Ayuk's worth that. No, that's too much. Those are your choices today on that front. Want to get to, you know, a lot of times we run short at the end yesterday. Want to get to some of the top five lists that we had submitted to us.
Yeah.
We're asking people, as of right now, now that the dust has mostly settled in free agency, who are the top five players that you are honing in on for the Jags at 17? So you got an idea of what you're giving up, potentially, if you make that deal for Ayuk. So we'll look at some of those. Got a few more thoughts from Eric Armstead that we didn't get around to. John Osier will swing by. He's out of town, but he's going to call in today at about 11:20 to give us his thoughts on the first complete week of Jaguar free agency. Keep in mind, when we talked to John last, I guess it was after the Armstead deal, right? It was because it was Thursday, and that went down on Wednesday afternoon. So, we, you know, he's had a chance to kind of sit back and see where all these things fit in, and what are the Jags likely to do at this point? Is it just settle in? And you can't almost find a pro day workout, by the way, where they're not featured at it, right? Like, you see all these, you know, at you know, obviously the big ones are going to be there, but it'll be like the McNeese State Pro Day. You know, there'll be like three NFL teams in attendance. And I feel like the Jags are at all these right now, so doing their due diligence, see them out there. And they continue. We've seen some reports in the last 24 hours of having some private meetings with defensive tackle. Still, I don't think that's likely on the board with the 17th pick, but drafts along process, man.
It's a seven-round deal.
It absolutely is, and who knows how they feel about Devon Hamilton. I would presume they're going to count on him bouncing back to be the guy that they thought he was going to be before they signed him to that deal. We shall see. All right, so we're ready to roll today. If you want to be a part of the program, number of ways you can do it. 641-1010 on the All-Pro Roofing phone line. Same number for the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Hit us up on social media. The poll is at MD_1010XL. You can go to at 1010XL Fat Tony and at 1010XL Denmark.
Ain't no laws when you're drinking claws, baby.
And give us your feedback that way as well. All right, we're ready to roll. YouTube chat is wide open. This is Jaguars Today. Johnny O along the way. We'll hear from Eric Armstead, what we didn't get to yesterday. Looking back at some of your reflections on where you're focusing with the 17th pick in the draft as well. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, I want to jump into something we were wrapping up yesterday, just looking at your wish list currently, and these things will obviously change. Tony, I know you noted with Jeff Prosser this morning, Marvin Harrison Jr. not working out at Ohio State's pro day. That doesn't mean he won't have his own pro day necessarily. Sure. You know, and I get, on the one hand, what does he have to gain? Well, he does have potentially that spot to lose if it matters that much to him, right? I don't know how much it matters. There's a little bit of money difference between being, say, the fourth, fifth, sixth pick, something like that. And most people figure if Arizona stays put with the fourth pick and it goes quarterback, 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 that they would take Marvin Harrison Jr. there. Of course, there's a lot of speculation and teams trying to trade into that spot as well. The Chargers right behind, moving on from Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, who just went to Pittsburgh on a one-year deal. These one-year deals, guys coming off major injury, can be worth up to $15 million. He's coming off a torn ACL. I mean, I don't know. I feel like this is kind of maybe not as bad because he's younger, not that much younger than Odell Beckham's deal last year with the Ravens. I thought was terrible. Who was bidding on these guys to give them $15 million? It's kind of nuts.
Apparently Aaron Rodgers.
I guess, yeah. Right? But, I mean, you know, what are you getting? How do you know what you're getting with Mike Williams?
Yeah, like watching the national community react to Mike Williams signing there with the Jets and all the reactions of what this is going to mean and how much of a chance this gives X and Y and Z there with the Jets, and I'm with you. Like, I'm on the side of, yeah, but he's coming off a torn ACL. Right? Like, it's not that simple.
And it's not like you're getting him for a four-year deal. Like, okay, that first year may not be the full Mike Williams.
There's
a reason
the L.A. Chargers are making him available in the first place. And it's not because I think they're sick of Mike. Right? Like, I think it's, look, this is an injured player. It's going to cost us a lot of money. We're going to have to figure something else out.
All right, and this coaching staff is not, you know,
committed to him.
Committed to him at all.
And that's fine.
New coaching staff.
You know, but I don't think the decision was made because they decided that Mike actually kind of stinks, right? Like, it is the situation led to Mike Williams being available in the first place. I don't think the Chargers wanted Mike Williams to be available, but it makes sense that they would make him available. A one-year deal makes some sense, right? I don't know why you'd offer him a multi-year deal at this point in time.
Right.
You know, like, that wouldn't make any sense in the world right now.
And maybe the base is lower than I think. He just said he could make up to $15 million.
Yeah, who knows what exactly that is.
Right. Yeah. You know, what he has to do that. It just seems like that's a risky investment, man. But I guess that the kind of the point that the Jets are at. They've got to focus on this year.
Yeah.
It's not kind of a year-by-year situation with Aaron Rodgers, even though he says, hey, maybe I'll play three or four more years. Anyway, just, you know, that's out there. Not many people mentioned Marvin Harrison Jr. Yesterday because as much as you'd like to have him, we asked you to try to be realistic about the players that you think would likely be available. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of the usual suspects. I'll start just some of the ones I got in order here. Tali Fuanga, the offensive lineman. Quinyon Mitchell, going to see him. He's in just about every single one.
Yeah.
Troy Fa'utanu?
Fa'utanu.
Fa'utanu.
Yeah.
I just have to be slow when I say it. He was on my list as well, even though I can't have it roll off my tongue as easily as I'd like. Brian Thomas was on my list. Byron Murphy was not. So that 4 out of 5 I agreed with. Mm-hmm. There with Terrion Arnold being the other guy out of Alabama. I'll go to the next list. Very next list. Got 3 different guys out of the 5, but I feel like they're saying the same thing, basically. You got Terrion Arnold on here. You got Mitchell, Adonai Mitchell. Now, maybe they just don't think that Thomas is likely to be there, or maybe they prefer Mitchell.
Yeah.
Also have Roma Dunze, which is interesting, and which makes me think they prefer Mitchell to Thomas because I think Adunze is less likely to be available to the Jags, at least if you believe all the mock drafts.
Yeah.
Let's see, who else? How do you feel about Jaxson Powers-Johnson at this point in time?
I was, you know, a lot of people responded with that. I saw a couple of people, you know, put out there, well, trade back a few spots, make Jaxson the guy at that. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't hate that idea or that plan. Right, if you were to move out of 17 with the idea being we're going to trade down to 21, 22 and target this guy, right? This is our guy. I'm okay with that plan. What's your plan B? Because what you don't know if you're making that kind of move is what's going to happen at 18, 19, 20, 21. Like, wherever you're going down to, you don't know that Jackson's going to be the guy that's going to be available to you when you trade back, right? Unless you traded back one spot and got some assurance from the team you're trading with. They're not coming up to get Jaxson Powers-Johnson. I'm okay still with the idea of Jaxson Powers-Johnson. I wouldn't do it at 17. If I moved back in the first round with the plan being we're going to move back in the first round, this is the guy we got circled as the one we'd like to land where we're going, I'd be okay with that kind of idea.
It worked last year because they had obviously they had a specific guy that they wanted to draft.
Sure.
Right? And in Anton Harrison. And, you know, we heard the way it went down, like the Giants were coming up. And I guess they sussed out it was for Deonte Banks or a defensive player. They asked the Bills. The Bills said offense. And they said, we need more information. Big guy, little guy, medium-sized guy?
Yeah.
Medium-sized guy. All right, so he's not a tackle. You know, and you can say, well, they could lie to you. Well, they could. You know, and then
they could, but they didn't.
And generally they won't, because then they're burning a bridge that they'll never be able to go back down.
Sure.
Again, you know, and you know, people talk about, oh, Balky has no friends in the business. Balky, you don't have to be friends with people to get deals done. And I know he was unable to trade up last year. I don't think that was people going, oh, I'm not going to get Balky the satisfaction. I mean, he moved back a few times. People will trade if it's in their benefit.
Yeah.
I don't think a GM's going, I'm going to stick it to Balky. Yeah, I could pick up two picks for this one. We don't really have a guy we love here, but I'm not going to do that because Trent Balky's running the Jaguars?
Yeah, I know. That doesn't make any sense. None. I know Pockets had Brock Bowers among the five that he listed yesterday,
yeah,
right? But talking about this specifically with Jackson Powers Johnson, say the Jags traded back to 24.
Okay.
And for whatever myriad of reasons, they're on the clock at 24, and Jackson Powers Johnson and Brock Bowers are both available. Right?
Like, yeah.
Which way would you go?
Me?
Yeah.
Corner. I'm not, because I'm not trading back targeting those players.
I get it. But if that were the situation, I'm not saying
I'd probably go with the lineman.
Okay.
Rather than the tight end. But I, you know, again, you're drafting a guy who, when they bring back Brandon Scherff here,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure they're not. I mean, look, I'm not saying if Brandon Scherff is miserable all off season that he couldn't get pushed for his job, but mm-hmm. I don't think I think they're looking at it like, we know who maybe our starting five is on the offensive line,
sure,
right now. And I have said I'm willing to bring in one of those combo tackle guard types, because just let the competition begin, and that's fine. I don't think there's much of a chance that they look at signing Mitch Morse and go, all right, now we're going to hold a center competition. I just
probably
don't
not.
Think.
Yeah.
I think this, the thing with Scherff is like, can we squeeze one more year out of him to find out if Cooper Hodges can be the answer long term? And he's kind of a placeholder. So I don't, you know, to me, though, taking one of the combo guys, when I say the combo guys, the guys who are tackles that could slide inside and play guard for a year or maybe even end up there, is that they may end up at tackle. And that is such a valuable position.
Yes.
That if you can fill it, that, and I get it, center can be a valuable and a tough position to fill as well. And I've seen plenty of comments of, you know, they're going way overboard on Mitch Morse. Mitch Morse is just an average guy. You don't have anything close to an average guy before you signed Mitch Morse.
No.
You had arguably the worst in the league.
Yeah.
So you're not going to, if the idea is you shouldn't improve unless you're improving to bring in the best in the league at their position, then you're going to be really dissatisfied most off seasons, because that's just not realistic. Sometimes you have to improve by going from having the 32nd best player to the 20th best player at his position.
That's what I've been advocating the whole time.
And that's center, improvement.
Right? Like, is just get it out of the way. It can't be the hindrance to you being able to run the offense effectively. Center can't get in the way of being able to run productive offense. I think Mitch Morse certainly gets you to at least that level where he's not going to get in the way of whatever they want to get done on the offensive side of the ball. I do, you know, I know there are still fans out there that would want to see it happen, right, with Jackson Powers Johnson, and I get it. They want to see the offensive line improve on the interior. They're still focused in on that. Okay. It doesn't sound like you and I are, right? Like, it's just not a focus for me at this point in time. I'm with you. If I'm going to draft an offensive lineman in the first round of this draft, I'm drafting from the deepest tackle draft they've been talking about in a decade, right? Like, that's where I would be looking to address the offensive line if that's where I'm going to be doing it, is the first round.
And by the way, I mean, this franchise, I'm not saying you can just snap your fingers and make this happen, but they've had some success with second, third round centers that have played a long time around these parts. And I don't know if at any point anyone said Brandon Linder's the best center in the league or Brad Meester was the best center in the league, but they certainly weren't a liability.
Yeah. Linder was talked about as top five.
Maybe. Right. Yeah. But I don't think people are saying Jackson Powers Johnson can be the guy. He can be Creed Humphrey. I don't think anyone ever felt that way about Brandon Linder. Nationally, maybe, you know, he was better even than his reputation indicated, because he did play in a small market. I'm not saying but the point being, where'd you get him? In the third round.
Well, and the broader point on that is Brandon Linder, whether he was a top five center or a top 10 center, top 15 center, whatever he was pretty good, you know, among his peers at that position. What did the Jaguars win while Brandon Linder was the center?
Well,
like, and that's the point of The center isn't what's going to make you win or lose. They can't get in the way. Linder was never in the way of the Jaguars being effective on offense. He was a good player, right? And I think that's what you're looking for, generally speaking, at the center position. Every now and then, guys get in the league like Kelce. Maybe you can make an argument for a guy like Creed Humphrey being that type of guy. Like, that guy is a difference maker. If you can find one of those guys, good for you for doing it, right? And finding some way to get a hold of one of those guys. But generally speaking, at center, specifically, all you need is he's good enough, right? And so for a team that the Jaguars seem to have right now, I think with Morse, they are good enough at center right now to go into 2024 and feel pretty good about that spot.
I got some numbers on Eric Armstead's contract from SpotTrack that have come out in the last 10 minutes, Tone.
All right.
So let's do this. Let's take a break here. And, you know, look, I'm not faulting anybody. If you want Jackson Powers Johnson, I don't think that's
it's all good.
A terrible thing to want. We all have different visions of how we would build the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm just, you know, the ones that get me, and I'm not saying anyone in particular that I've seen in the last couple of days, but the ones that get me is, if they don't do this, they're stupid. Like, that's the only path. That there's no one way to be successful. There are a bunch of different ways to be successful.
Yeah.
Will the Jags take one of those paths? Even if they take the exact path you laid out, you don't know. You can't predict for injuries, you know, underperformance, all kinds of things. So, you know, look, I have a path that I'd like them to go down. If they don't go down it, as long as I look at that, what they do, and think, okay, there's a plan there, I could see it. I could see how that could all come together.
There are enough viable paths. Yeah, there are enough viable paths that to, at this point in the process, be like, if they don't take this path, they're idiots. Okay. You know, I just disagree with you. That's the way I would view the situation.
By the way, the cap is a magical thing. But looking at Eric Armstead, $4.5 million for this year. That's not bad.
No.
On what was reported to be a 3-year, $51 million deal, Tony, how could that be possible? We'll delve into the numbers when we return in a moment, and we'll hear a little bit more from Eric Armstead that we didn't get to yesterday as he met with the media via Zoom earlier this week. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Dylan Denmark here with you. If you want to get on board, 641-1010 on the All-Pro Roofing phone lines. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
My goal was to find the next stage of my career, someplace that I feel comfortable, that value me as a player as well, too, and a place I could, you know, take this next step and grow in, and a place that is competitive and that I feel, you know, I can come in and help get them over the hump.
That's Eric Armstead, new Jaguar defensive tackle, on his goal in free agency. Our goal is that he helps the Jags get over the hump as well, and they ultimately win a Super Bowl. Tony, the numbers from SpotTrack on the contract of Eric Armstead are out. We heard 3 years, $51 million, and that's all we really heard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to SpotTrack, 3 years, $43.5 million. Hashtag bulky masterclass.
How
right?
does that
Bam!
So different.
Bam! I just saved $7.5 million.
Yeah.
Just like that. Bulky masterclass in effect. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that happens, honest to goodness. I mean, there's probably a way that he makes, I don't know, some unlikely to be earned incentives.
Maybe,
or something
yeah.
like that. $28 million guaranteed, 3 void years on the back end. That really doesn't matter to you. In reality, could come down to being a 2-year, $29 million. Deal. His cap hit this year, $4.5 million. Next year, $7.4 million. Still very affordable if he's playing at a decent level. Then it jumps to $19.4 million in 2026. But looking at the deal, Tone, if you get out of it, you're only saving about $2.3 million against the cap, right? Because there's a huge dead cap number attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
The salary jumps up. So it's conceivable that you might say, hey, for that extra $2.3 million in cap space, we're not going to be able to replace Eric Armstead. You know, now it's still Shad Khan's cash, but
yeah,
whatever. I'm not worried about that. And then with the dummy years added to the back end of it, which spreads the cap hit out, means that if they roster him in 2026, so the full 3 years, they're going to take a dead cap hit in 2027 regardless. It's all right. We'll be playing in like Arlington that year. Anyway, $12 million dead cap hit. So there's going to be a big dead cap hit at some point for Eric Armstead. And some people say that's no big deal. Eventually, it's a big deal. Right? Eventually, I mean, the Saints, they always get under the cap, right? Are they contenders, though? You know what I mean? You know, like maybe AFC or NFC South contenders because the division's been shaky. But, you know, I guess if you've got a decent quarterback, you can be a division contender. The Saints aren't championship contenders. And as long as they keep playing this game of having to cut three or four starters every year to get down under the cap, they probably won't be for a while. But anyway, Eric Armstead, very affordable for the next for the first couple years of that deal. And everything you heard from the people that met him, very impressive individual. We've seen that based on his track record, you know, as the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award nominee for the Niners multiple times. Seems like a good guy. Seems very Calais Campbell-like, as many have mentioned.
Sure.
For his play on the field and the way he comports himself off the field, right? So, great. We love Calais. Hopefully, we'll love Armstead. We'll particularly love him if he gives us 14 sacks.
That'd be sweet.
This year, you know?
I'll take
eight.
Yeah.
Eight from the defensive tackle position. If you're not getting a major step back, even if Josh, let's say Josh is a 15 sack guy, maybe Trayvon's 12, you know?
Yeah.
I could absolutely see them both getting in the ballpark of the same combined number. Yeah.
And if they're getting more than 2.5 from somebody on the interior of the defensive line,
Travis Gibson, the bar is low. Uh-huh. Will you step over it, please? Mm-hmm. All right, how many more years will we get out of Eric Armstead here in Jacksonville? We don't know, but he thinks he's got like 5 to 6 more good years left.
Injuries are a part of sports. And, you know, I have my plan together in place to make sure that I'm putting my body and myself in the best position to be out there for my team. And I'm going to do that. And, you know, I think it's going to go very well. And, you know, I plan to have a long career. You know, I think I got a good 5 or 6 more years in me. So I don't plan on stopping anytime soon.
Yeah, and you love to hear that. This is a guy, and, he's already signed the deal, right? Mm-hmm. If he went, hey, man, let me get through these next 3 years and then let's see, you would be like, that seems reasonable, right? You're coming off a meniscus surgery. But that tells you he probably feels pretty good about generally his health where he is at this stage. He's been a productive player. And he, again, this is not a position that necessarily is going to lead to big stat numbers or big stats, but it's his impact on his immediate teammates in that front four and the front seven that is going to really tell the tale on his effectiveness.
Yeah, he's been playing this NFL game long enough to know what it's like to feel good going into an offseason, what it's
for sure.
To feel, oh, I don't know about this, right? And eventually they all hit that wall. You know, it's hard to figure out when exactly that's going to be. Calais Campbell, it feels like that wall may never hit him, right? Like, it just, that guy just, the Energizer Bunny, man.
Some guys are built different,
right,
man.
Like, and Calais was one of those guys. I don't know if Eric Armstead is one of those guys or not, but he feels pretty confident in where he's at with his body right now that he can play for 5 or 6 more years. Eric Armstead also said that he's joining Jacksonville with the idea of that he wants to help the Jags get to the next level.
The Jags were a good team before me. And, you know, whenever I enter a situation, you know, not just football, but in life in general, when I'm meeting people, when I'm, you know, entering a situation, working with people, you know, I want to make the place better than when I found it. I want to make a positive impact. And I think this team was already a phenomenal team, and I think I can help get them to the next level. So having that opportunity is something I look forward to as well.
Well, he's been a guy, he's been to the Super Bowl a couple times, right? Hasn't won the ultimate prize, right? So he's still hungry, but he's been with a successful organization, knows the amount of work you got to put in, all the right things. I just don't think there's any box that he doesn't particularly check here as long as he plays at a high level and he gets the opportunity to play with a couple of what we feel are ascending pass rushers. Certainly, Trayvon Walker took a big jump last year, and Josh Allen, now we've talked about him until we're blue in the face all off season, how good he played, how well he played last year, and what he ultimately will hopefully earn from the Jags, and how much was that attractive to Armstead, the chance to play with that duo?
Obviously, those two guys stick out immediately. You know, the type of talent they have, the production they've had in the NFL. You know, playing with those guys and you know, Roy and Hamilton and, you know, a bunch of other guys too that I can't wait to meet. It's going to be phenomenal.
At least he knows who his teammates are.
Well,
it's
interesting
in the door
that he mentioned Hamilton, right? Yeah. I don't know if Hamilton's like a household name around the league and things like that, you know, and because I have noticed, Tony, and every team, it benefits them to do the due diligence at this time of year, right? You scout a guy, even if you don't have a great need necessarily at the position, maybe you value him as a third rounder and all of a sudden he's there at the beginning of the fifth round. And if you don't have a good evaluation, sometimes the values are so good that you got to take that player, right? But I have seen them connected with some defensive tackles, which is interesting. I really – this is one of the questions that we're not going to know the answer to, but I'd like to know how they feel. Like, are they counting on Devon Hamilton to be the guy they expected him to be when they inked him to that contract extension last year? You know, or do they think that – maybe he's not going to recapture that. I don't know because, you know, he did get back to a point last year where they said he was healthy.
Yeah.
Wasn't health, wasn't an issue.
Well, and the way those situations work, they're not going to say anything different until they do something different.
Right. That's why I said I'd love to know because we probably won't find out.
Like, they're going to let you know by how they handle it, right? We talked about it with the center position going into this offseason. I don't care what they're saying about Luke Fortner 6 weeks ago. I don't care. Right? They're going to do something at center or they don't. Like, and so they added Mitch Morse. They answered how they felt about center with Luke Fortner by going out and getting a guy to take the job from the guy that they had. If they're going out and drafting guys to replace Devon Hamilton, it tells you where their confidence level is with the guy that, we looked at the contract yesterday. They can't get out from it. Mm-hmm. They're going to be paying him for the next couple of years, but are they really nervous about what kind of player are they getting? And Eric Armstead was asked a couple days ago about where he feels like he fits in with this defensive line.
I think it's important, especially being in the league this long, that no one can do it on their own. I've seen a lot of situations where guys aren't, you know, you don't get the full potential out of guys because, you know, they're not surrounded, you know, with other great players as well too. So I'm excited to you know, take the field with those guys and, you know, learn this new defense together and start that journey.
All right, last piece here with Eric Armstead, and we'll shelve it for now. Calais Campbell was ultimately did win Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, was a great community fixture as well as a fixture on that defensive line for the Jaguars, and Armstead has been noted. And you know, I didn't know this about him. I don't follow this kind of stuff outside of our market necessarily, but he does have a foundation, and he talked about it a couple days ago and how he wants to be able to help out here in Jacksonville.
Part of my masterclass tweet and what I want to get into is learning more about the city, learning where impoverished communities need the most help and how I can, you know, bridge that gap. I'm excited to get to know the people there. My nonprofit is education-based, which is across the globe. You know, I'm sure there's education inequities in Jacksonville as well, too, that I'm excited to explore more and really see how I can be of a huge impact in Jacksonville as well, too. It's across the country, but like I said, these issues that I'm trying to solve are across our nation and every community. You know, there's equity gap, there's achievement gap, there's poverty. And I really feel that education is the key to solving a lot of issues in our country. We look at social injustice and other issues as well, too. So I'm passionate about that, and that's going to follow me wherever I'm at. So I'm excited to learn Jacksonville and see, you know, where and how I can help.
Hey, look, I don't know what the practical impact is going to be. You know what I mean? Because, like, that's, to me, that's vague. I don't know exactly what that, like, when you are focusing on education, what are the things you do to – focus on that, but I'll say this, any help is welcome, right? So on that front, again, everybody that you see who covered Eric Armstead in San Francisco just raves about what you're getting as a character person on top of what you're getting on the field. Look, I'll be honest with you. The on-the-field stuff is the utmost important, right? Luke Fortner may be the Boy Scout of Boy Scouts, but you know what I mean? Like, you got to be able to play. That's the number one thing. Mm-hmm. And if you do and you bring all those intangibles with you, that's fantastic. And it seems like Eric Armstead checks all the boxes there. We'll come back. Tony's going to take us around the league, find out what's still percolating out there. Mike Williams going to Pittsburgh for a reportedly up to $15 million one-year deal. Then again, we thought Eric Armstead was signing for 3 years, $51 million, Tony, and they're telling us now it's 3 years, $43.5 million. It's never quite as lucrative.
Did you say Pittsburgh? You meant the Jets?
I did, because he was talking to Pittsburgh.
He was.
I think he was
like
talking
it was
to
one of those. He had that schedule of he's going to go to all these visits. Well, he's not making those visits anymore. He's
I absolutely did. You know who now Pittsburgh has jumped in the whole we're going to wake up tomorrow and get Brandon Ayuk thing. So they're on that front. You're absolutely right. It is the Jets. I did say Pittsburgh, and I knew that, but my brain in my mouth. Don't always get along.
It happens.
Yeah. All right. We'll come back and we'll do that going around the league. Johnny O coming up at about 20 after the hour. You're listening to Jaguars Today. The question of the day simply, is it worth giving San Francisco the 17th pick in the draft for Brandon Ayuk, knowing that you'll likely have to give him a top-of-the-market wide receiver contract if that were a possibility for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Simply yes or no on that one. The percentages have held up after about the first 100 votes. It's eerie how often it does that, but they're holding pretty firm right now. We'll give you an update on where things stand as we embark on hour two of Jaguars Today, straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Jags, Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Every single thing. Hour two is here. Usually Johnny O in studio. He's out of town today, but he will be checking in with us coming up in less than 20 minutes. Get all the latest from the senior writer from Jaguars.com, 641-1010. We got the Big Meech tomorrow, Pockets. Is that right?
Meech texted me 1040.
1040.
Good
1040,
to go.
Good buddy. Tomorrow, and Tommy Mack will be back in studio on Friday as well, talking all things Jaguars. I know he was going to delve into on his pod on should they, shouldn't they, on Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. That is our question of the day. Today, asking you if you knew the Jags would have to give up, say, $28 million a year for Brandon Ayuk on average. And again, you know, some of that money is funny money. That first-year cap hit may be way lower. But regardless, you're going to have to give him a big money deal.
Are you willing to give up the 17th pick and pay him like a one?
And pay him like you would have had to pay Calvin Ridley, even more than you'd pay Ridley. Yeah. That was it's attractive. You know, you say, oh, I would have paid Ridley that. He's better than Ridley. Okay, but with Ridley, you weren't giving up the 17th pick. In fact, you weren't giving up the 48th pick. At least that was the hope, right? And the third rounder was already baked in the equation. I'd give up a third, and who wouldn't give up a third and a second for the right to sign Brandon Ayuk?
Sure.
I'll give you a couple extra mil if we could save that 17th pick in the draft, man. Anything, I'd give up 48 to do it. But ideal, I'd give up like give up that third and a second next year. Oh, come on now. Now we're talking, though. Now we're talking because now we can get us a cornerback. And oh, I don't care. Go draft Jackson Paris Johnson at that point. I don't care, man. You know what? And get us a corner in round two. I saw this. We're going to go around the league here in a second. Imagine Jaguar fans in March of 2021 knew they were getting Trevor Lawrence, but got immediately upset when everyone talked about how good of a prospect he was and then insisted they should trade back for a haul of picks and build around Gardner Minshew. That's what's happening on Bears Twitter. I don't think that's what's happening at all. Gardner Minshew was a sixth-round pick who was a fun story.
Yeah.
And a lot of people immediately questioned whether his level of play was sustainable. Can you build a team around him? We're going to find out maybe because the Raiders gave him a two-year deal worth like $15 million or up to $15 million or whatever. Yeah. And I think he's got a great chance and likely will go in a half step ahead of Aiden O'Connell and we'll probably hold him off and we'll find out just how good he can be. But Justin Fields was at one point considered to be the top pick in the draft or in conversation for it and was a top half of the first round guy, you know, and he's flashed at times and certainly his college resume indicated that, you know, pro personnel people would think more of him.
I don't think the Bears would be all that upset if they hadn't traded and gotten the number one overall pick this year and were just picking at 9. Right? Like, if they were outside of the quarterback sweepstakes and still had Fields, I think they would have been okay if that's the direction the franchise was going to have to go this year. That's not the situation they're in. They do have the number one overall pick. Caleb Williams is Caleb Williams. It's going to be the direction they're going to want to go. So they got to figure out what else to do with Justin Fields at that point in time.
Right,
so,
and they have the ninth pick. On top of that, even if it was just one, you could go, oh, man, you could get so much. But they're quietly putting together a pretty decent roster.
Yeah, it's right not bad.
Now, you know,
yeah.
You know, they've got corners. Their line is not bad.
They've got seven weapons.
Games. Right. They went from 3 to 7. And so anyway, I don't think those situations are identical. I don't think that's exactly what's going on, but so be it. Not our problem, quite frankly. And Pittsburgh, the big beneficiary here. All right, let's go around the rest of the National Football League.
Now, gems around the NFL, brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jack's Beach.
The Houston Texans are signing defensive end Mario Edwards Jr. to a one-year deal. Tennessee is signing defensive tackle Sebastian Joseph Day on a one-year deal. Wide receiver Mike Williams signing a one-year deal worth up to $15 million with the New York Jets. Former Jags corner Shaq Griffin has agreed to terms on a deal with the Minnesota Vikings. San Francisco signing former Jaguars and a couple other places too. Quarterback Josh Dobbs to a one-year deal. Bishop Kenny alumni quarterback John Wolford has signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Cleveland Browns are signing wide receiver Jerry Jeudy, who they traded a 5th and 6th round pick to Denver for last week, to a 3-year contract extension worth up to $58 million with $41 million in guaranteed money.
I got to see what the base value of that is, right?
Yeah,
because
no
that's
doubt.
A hell of a lot of money for a guy who has done nothing but disappoint.
Yeah, and newly signed edge rusher Chase Young, who got his guaranteed $13 million 1-year deal from the New Orleans Saints on Monday, will be having neck surgery, but it's expected to be ready to go for the start of training camp.
Expected to?
Yeah.
Here's $13 million fully guaranteed.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, good luck with your neck surgery.
When it broke yesterday, I was like, what?
If Bulky had signed Chase Young to that deal, are you kidding me? This is the only kind of deal Trent Bulky can get with a player who's got to have surgery lined up. it's funny to me. And by the way, I mean, his reputation just can't be that great. I mean, he's a young guy who was, what was he, the 2nd pick in the draft?
Yes.
When he came out, he's flashed. Look, you know, plenty of guys flash, right? But Chase Young, there's some bad film of him out there.
Yeah, whatever is going on.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't know if there's a worse clip than that clip of Diontae Johnson that was making the rounds. And I'm sure, you know, if you are a Steeler fan, you probably had seen it well before this, but you know, Diontae Johnson was on the trade block, ultimately was sent to Carolina. And there's a clip where it's a running play. Obviously, the ball's not going to Diontae. All right. So Deontay's at the top of the screen. Steelers are going from left to right in your perspective. And the ball snapped and he just basically stands there.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I was watching live when that play happened.
Right? The runs to the left side,
yeah.
And it is Najee or Jalen Warren. I can't tell who it was, but they fumble the ball. Right in front of Diontae Johnson. He turns his back, doesn't even react to it. Guy right there picks it up, just runs right past him, and he's just kind of like moping around, like doing whatever.
What a weird, going back to Chase Young, what a weird first 4 years of his career. You know, he's the number 2 overall pick. Mm-hmm. He wins Defensive Rookie of the Year. He's a Pro Bowler his rookie year,
right?
With 7.5 sacks. Right. He only played 9 games the next year, 3 games the year after that with 1.5 and 0 sacks in years 2 and 3. Well, last year he played in 16 of 17 games, even after being traded, but he only started 6.
He started 6, and what did he have, like 10 tackles or something like that? And something crazy,
he had
10 right?
10 tackles for tackles San the Francisco.
In 9 games.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not expecting him to put up massive tackle numbers, but yeah, right. I mean,
Something,
right.
Yeah. A defensive end with 44 tackles, which is what he had his rookie year, that's not bad, especially when you're getting the pass rush numbers.
Right, 12 quarterback hits,
right.
All that stuff that went along with it.
And it felt like, all right, here he goes. Like, there's a reason this guy was the number 2 pick in the draft, and man, did he hit a wall. Year 2 or 3, and the injuries just slowed him down.
I don't know. Is it injuries? Does he
and
not
now
work
he needs
hard?
Neck
is he?
Surgery.
I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you. His nickname, I've never heard a single person call him Predator.
No.
But then again,
that was a college thing.
I think.
Yeah.
Nobody's
called him that in the NFL, but in
and maybe
out
they
college,
did at Ohio State. Do you remember that? Okay. I don't remember that. And then again, they're probably plenty of local nicknames that are given to players that I'm not aware of. All right, before we move on with Johnny O coming up, we had a clip we wanted to play. This is from Adam Schefter's podcast over at ESPN. He was talking about the path that Eric Armstead traveled to ultimately land as a Jacksonville Jaguar. Gibby put this in the system for us. Let's listen.
Eric Armstead at one point had what I think he thought was an agreement with the Houston Texans and flew down to Houston only to find out when he landed that the Houston Texans were going to go sign Danielle Hunter instead. And so that deal is off. So Eric Armstead then had to go find a new home. And he did. Mm-hmm. He found a new home in Buffalo. And they had the framework of an agreement in place where he would go to Buffalo. But then someone stepped in with a better offer. And Jacksonville got a deal done. And so Eric Armstead might be the only player in free agency this year that had the frameworks of three different agreements with three different teams. First Houston, then Buffalo, then finally Jacksonville, where he goes and is reunited with the man that drafted him in San Francisco, the Jaguars general manager, Trent Baalke. And it is, to me, symbolic of the way that the week works in many ways. People say things and do other things.
Yeah, sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I had heard, and I think we all had heard, that he was going to Houston via trade, right? That San Francisco was going to trade him. So maybe that meant Houston then was going to give him a new contract, mm-hmm. right? And that's what they were meeting about. But when they met, I don't think he was a free agent at that point in time. And they were going to trade for him. Then they signed Danielle Hunter. And my feeling was they didn't have the cap space available immediately, or they didn't want to pour that many resources in the defensive line. I'm not sure. Sounds to me like while he was in Buffalo, Baalke's like, no, I'm not going to take no for an answer. And he gave him a better offer. That's what it came down to. And you say, well, you got to outspend guys. That's what you do in free agency, right? Mm-hmm. If he goes to Buffalo and Baalke was interested in him, you say he got outfoxed. So I'm happy he's here. Let's put it that way. I don't care what path he took to ultimately get here. You look at what Buffalo has at defensive tackle. Ed Oliver finally had kind of that breakout campaign last year. And Daquan Jones is a good player. It's interesting that they would be looking to spend that much on that position with two solid players in there. Ely Ankou, by the way, is their third defensive tackle, which is interesting, considering all the salary cap purging they had to do this offseason, Tony. How important, you know, how much they must value the potential addition of Armstead up in Buffalo to even consider a guy that you know was not going to be cheap at that point in time. So, anyway, he's here. We got him. We're happy about that. We'll also have John Osier. We got him, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. He's coming in straight ahead, so stick around for that. The question of the day out there, let me just give you these two reactions I got immediately following one another about 10 minutes ago. Tony, on the question, would you trade for Brandon Ayuk, giving up the 17th pick, knowing you're giving him a top-of-the-market contract? First one from Poppy Grande. 10,000% yes. Not even sure what the downside is. Well, the downside is you're paying top 10 money for
a lot of money in a valuable
pick. And the pick, yeah. Right? The very next one from Crisco said, not when you can get one in the first round. That could be better. We need a rookie contract at the wide receiver position. I mean, so you can't be much more on the opposite side of it there. You can cast your vote on whether or not you think it would be worth it to bring in Brandon Ayuk. Yes, he is worth it. No, that's simply too much when you combine the draft compensation and the potential contract going together. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line. Oh Knows with Jaguars.com's John Osher, brought to you by
Kingfish Pest Control, proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars
on 1010XL.
All right, Johnny O here with us from afar, from Jaguars.com, their senior writer. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Actually calling in from Nashville, having a better time than I did in January, guys. Much better time.
Yeah, that wasn't – can we forget about that trip in its entirety? Just a little vacation for you, or are you doing any work?
Yeah, just a couple of days with my son and his fiancée-to-be and the wife. We've never really done Nashville together, wanted to do it. And Sherry, my wife, may be the only woman our age in Jacksonville who's never been to Nashville before. So it's a first for her. So good time. It's It was what you think it was. So I'm a little slow this morning, but I'm with you.
So when you say you're doing Nashville, what, and you're a little slow, so that means you're out honky tonking last night. I guess. I mean, like, what is the
long workout?
Is that what it was? All right. And what is doing Nashville consist of for the Osier clan? Do you go to a concert, or what do you do?
No, I just sort of doing the Broadway thing. I mean, okay. I've done it a lot. I mean, this is probably, I was thinking as I was coming in, I've probably been to Nashville more than any other road city, because I did it with the Jags back in the day, the Colts for 10 years. This one, Indy, of course, I lived in. But so Nashville, probably 20, 25 trips. So Broadway, I'll admit, is a little, I've seen it. And once you've seen one, once you've seen one Broadway bar, you've sort of seen them all. But it never fails. I mean, you see things that you don't see that often at midnight on Broadway. So it was enjoyable.
All right. Well, we're glad, and hope you continue to enjoy your time. Thanks for taking a few minutes for us today. John, let's talk about a few things here, including the Jags' potential pursuit of a guy like Brandon Ayuk. Emile O'Brien has reported that there was interest on the Jags' side, but that the asking price is a 17th pick in round one. I don't, you know, and that kind of scared the Jags off. I don't suspect that any team is looking to give up a mid-first round pick and the contract that would go along with it, right? I mean, let's say it was a swap of first or even the 48th pick in the draft. Do you think the Jags, do you get the sense that Trent Baalke is trying to push as many chips to the center of the table this year as possible? He's done a really good job, I think, managing the salary cap to this point. Do you think the Jags would be a player at a lesser price?
Well, yeah, I mean, if there was interest, the rumors were enough last week. The fact that they went after Calvin so hard, didn't get him, it certainly sounds like they is sort of the if-then scenario there. Like, if they get a guy, then he's probably gone. If they don't, he's still Zay. Sorry about that, guys. He's still Zay Jones and can still do it. So, I'm sure Trent is making calls on players that potentially could be available and finding the right price. As you guys alluded to, a first and a contract, boy, GMs have trouble giving up that much double equity, right? So that's that would be tough to swallow. But, you know, I guess the only way I can look at this off season is to sort of expect the unexpected. Because I didn't expect this much free agency play.
Right.
I wasn't sure that they would do the cap that far out into the future, but they have. So it does feel all in to me. I'm not philosophically, that's not sort of how I look at things, but they're going after it.
With what they've done so far in free agency, John, how improved do you expect the offense to be coming up in 2024?
Well, I mean, it's all, and you know, not trying to avoid the question, to me, it's all about Mitch Morse. If he solidifies basically 2.5 spots instead of just one, like if his presence makes Sheriff better, Ezra Cleveland, I think fans have to sort of give him a break. He was only there 4 or 5 games starting hurt. If they've solidified that, I think they'll be a lot better. I think they were, you know, big, you know, effective runs in big situations away from being pretty good last year, meaning every time they'd get to 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2 in the red zone, stalled out. And how many times did that hurt them? And how much better would you feel about the offense, even if the stats were the same, if they had converted 7 or 8 of those in key situations, win game? So he's the key. I think he makes them better because they went backwards a lot last year in those situations. So are they, quote, better at receiver? I don't know, but I think you can make the argument that they can be as good at receiver as they were in 2022. And when they were running more effectively, that group was okay. So, yeah, I think they can be better.
John, I think if you take a receiver at 17, you could see if that's – let's say it's Brian Thomas out of LSU, right? You could see him projecting as ultimately your number one, but certainly a starter right out of the gates, right? If you take cornerback there – if he's the right guy, you could see him walking into a starting role, winning a starting role right out of the gates. If you take an offensive lineman there, that may not be the case. Maybe he's 1 year, you know, the old Vic Ketchman jar on the shelf as Cam Robinson plays one more year here in Jacksonville. May, you know, if you go center, you're not going to start probably over Mitch Morse right away. Do you think they are unlikely to go with a developmental position, for lack of a better term? I'm not explaining that exactly right, but I mean. A guy that, that may not have a starting role immediately in 2024. Are they willing to take that kind of player with the 17th pick?
Well, it doesn't feel like it. And I would have to put percentages on it, because I don't think, even going into the draft for them, I doubt they'll be sitting there saying, okay, corner and receiver and everything else is off the table. If the right offensive lineman fell, I think they probably feel like they can line up. And offensive line is really important, as you guys have pointed out. You know, Walker Little and Cam Robinson entering the last year of their contract. Sheriff and Mitch Morse, you know, they're both 30 years old. You know, so if you don't address it early this year, you're going to be, I don't know, maybe not scrambling is the right word, but you're going to have to go pretty quick in the next couple of years to get that core back. So is it a need now? No. Is it a need over a three-year period? I think it's a huge need over a three-year period because of the age. I would have trouble right now predicting them not going wide receiver or corner. I've been saying for a while, I don't think it's receiver, because I feel like they think they can line up. I'm just looking at the depth chart and what they've got. You need three corners in the NFL these days. To me, they've got two that you feel, hey, these guys can really go out and be big-time players.
So while Cam Robinson is here now, and we know the cap hit is significant and the savings that it potentially represents, they've gone through free agency when, you know, guys are mostly available at this point. Not that you can't use that cap space to maybe, you know, get a deal done with somebody else, be it Tyson Campbell or Trevor Lawrence or Josh Allen or whatever, however you want to structure it. But at this point, John, how surprised would you be if they did, let's say the right offensive lineman is there? Do you think that Cam Robinson is still a lock to be on this roster, or is there a scenario where they go, hey, you know what, we're going to try to trade him now during the draft, recoup a pick, but we're going in this direction on the offensive line?
Yeah, I think on paper it's definitely possible. The X factor is they really like what Cam brings and all that. If it wasn't for the – and that matters a great deal. This is football, right? So, but – if it was just on paper, I think that would be a very logical move. Either, you know, not release Cam, but as you say, if you can get something for him, get that off the books, that's definitely a plug-and-play offensive line. We take care of short-term, we have that off the books, and we can free up some of this, you know, mentally I call it Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence money. Whatever they're doing in that long-term, you can put it toward that. So I would say that's probably the third scenario behind maybe corner, you know, and yeah, I keep waffling on wide receiver, maybe wide receiver. But that, I think that definitely makes a lot of sense. I always like to say there are certain guys that you don't want to be standing in the parking lot waving goodbye to. You know, you can talk about it on paper, then all of a sudden you're playing without him. And Cam's one of those guys. It's like, okay, on paper, we can get by without him. And then you see him leaving and you're like, oh man, that's going to stink. He's not here. So I think it's going to be hard to get rid of Cam from that regard. It's what he brings.
John, since we heard from Eric Armstead a couple days ago, Mike and I here on the show have at least talked around what the expectations could be, should be, for Devon Hamilton in 2024 and 2025, where it doesn't appear they're going to have anybody get out from underneath that contract. Have you heard anything about where he's at and what is fair to expect out of Devon Hamilton with the way 2023 went?
Well, you know, I haven't heard. In talking to Devon late last year, I never got any sense that there was worry on his part about not coming back 100%. It felt last year, obviously, he never got back to what he was in 22. Was it the back? Was it the rust? Was it not, you know, all that stuff combined, tentativeness, lack of confidence? I don't know, but he was not dominant, and there were times in 22 he was dominant. I think a year removed from that, fair is it fair to a guy who went through whatever he went through last year? Maybe not. Is it fair from NFL expectations? Do you think he's going to be disruptive? He was in the backfield a lot in 2022, late in the season. That's hard for a defensive tackle. I think it's fair to think that Armstead brings that, can free him up a little bit. There are people who sort of like Devon, not so much as a nose, but as a penetrating player. If you can free him up in that, they're a lot better. But yes, that's the expectation. I don't know. I don't have a great feel 100% detail wise, physically, how ready he's going to be able to do that.
Yeah, none of us do, right? So one of the mysteries. Yeah. And they have a better sense than we do, clearly. But they've got a lot of money tied up in that position,
yeah.
You know, between Armstead, Hamilton, and Roy Robertson Harris. And they've got some of their depth pieces back as well. So,
that was a huge thing last year, too, right? You have all that
sure.
Big-time free agency money, and then you also have it in a Lewicon. So you expect the interior to be stout. It was for 3 months. And then at the end, it just wasn't at all. And in their planning, you expect to be a good run defense when you spent that much on those areas.
So, John, are you mailbagging in on vacation, or what are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Still doing it. Oh, yeah. That never stops. It's like the post office. there'll be an ozone tomorrow. Sorry, guys. I shouldn't hit snooze on that alarm. There'll be mailbags. Then on Thursday, I'll be back in Jacksonville getting it done.
Wait, so, did you just get up?
No, that was just the alarm. I had it set originally for 5 minutes before you guys called, but I surprised myself, got up, and ran.
Okay.
So I just didn't have the alarm set up. That was the snooze for the original alarm set, which was 5 minutes before you guys were going to call.
All right. Well,
we
didn't hear
it. A little insight into my mess of a life.
Right. I would be most proud of you if you were telling us that you were going to take a nap as soon as you hung up. That would be the most impressive thing. That's the way to vacation.
Were I traveling alone, or was it just my son and I? We probably would. But we have the significant others with us, so they'll probably shame us into something
gotcha.
Like a first watch
right.
breakfast.
Then again, if you're traveling alone, I don't know if you're going to Nashville to hit Broadway, but who knows?
That's fair.
I don't know. Johnny, enjoy the rest of your time off. Keep those mailbags coming. We'll read up on everything through your eyes at Jaguars.com, and we'll see you next week in studio.
Fantastic. Thanks for being flexible, guys. We'll see
you. Hi, buddy. There he goes, John Osier. By the way, speaking of Cam Robinson there, Tony, and why, you know, that yeah, we can move on. Yeah, we can save this. Oh, he is maybe – oh, we're not going to have Cam. You know what I mean? Like, there is that, but this from Daniel Griffiths, who works with Jaguar Report, and this popped up in my timeline. Now, I don't know who – ranked these numbers, where these numbers come from, right? But it says Cam Robinson was among the NFL's best last year in pass protection. The Jags left tackle had a pass block efficiency of 97.4, which ranked 14th out of 90 qualifying tackles, 64 starting tackles, but I guess 90 played enough of snaps to qualify for this. And he is 14th, which would be like about middle of the pack among the top group of starters, right? Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, your top 15 in pass efficiency, that's not bad. There's no guarantee you're going to draft a guy who's going to be any better than that with that pick, but at a certain point, you got to reset the financial clock as well.
Yeah.
You know?
It was funny. I was watching NFL Live yesterday afternoon, and they had a Jaguars direct question where they showed the pass and run block win rates for the offensive line last year. And, you know, they were 29th and 31st, I think, in each category. So they were really bad in those categories last year. And then they asked one of the hosts, they were like, do you think the Jaguars, the moves they've made, has gotten them better? And the entire conversation was, well, they replaced Calvin Ridley with Gabe Davis. What does that have to do with their pass and run block win rates?
I'm guessing nobody on the panel knew
right.
what they have done or
like,
not
I was
done
just
on
like,
the offensive
what
line.
Is happening?
Like, and it's not like they just spring that on you.
No.
There's a rundown. You know what you're
going to
get asked about.
Y'all wanted to talk about Calvin Ridley again. Okay.
I
suppose that was the plan. Okay.
I guess. And, you know, or I love, and I've seen a little of this. Not, you know, some people are actually savvy and nuanced, but I don't know what they're doing, thinking they're going to replace Calvin Ridley with Gabe Davis. Well, they weren't thinking they're going to replace Calvin Ridley with Gabe Davis. And then Gabe Davis told you that himself, that their plan was to have them both all along. And so clearly they need a guy, or they feel like they need a guy at the top of
and
that depth chart.
They didn't pull it off this past weekend, but they at least seemed to have been interested in whatever the availability was for Brandon Ayuk.
Right.
And who knows what they're going to do in the draft to address any of these things or over the next few weeks. It's not that they're not paying attention to how they could address the top of their wide receiver depth chart.
Honestly, if you came away with a corner that you loved and Brandon Ayuk and nothing else, corner at 17 and Brandon Ayuk, is that enough for you?
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, because honestly, like, I love the idea of extra picks. I love when they draft seven or eight guys and I try to project, like, oh, this guy's going to turn into a useful piece here. You know what? Usually they don't, right? On every team.
Yeah.
Usually there's a big miss rate. You get outside the first round. If I can get that 48th, I'll give you the 48th. I'll give you a fifth rounder. I'll give you another fifth next year. Take Brandon Ayuk. And then whatever I get with those other picks is gravy. I'll take a corner at 17. I'll take Brandon Ayuk. And are we perfect? Are there not some flaws? Look, I'll draft some offensive line depth or pass rush depth, or get what I can with those other selections, but you're not going to do better than that.
No.
I mean, if you don't get Brandon Ayuk, then you're looking at maybe you take a receiver at 48, or you take him at 17, and you get a corner, and you get a guy who's probably maybe turns out to be better than Brandon Ayuk in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, right? But now you're getting a guy, and granted, it's the money as well. It's just that with 17, I'm pretty confident they can get a corner who can walk in here and upgrade that room.
I would think so.
Big time.
They're likely going to be taking the second, maybe third corner.
You
coming
give me
off.
Ronald Darby as my third corner. Yeah. Okay, now we're starting to talk about a pretty decent group potentially back there. All right, let's take our final time out here. When we return, we'll look at the Chad and Sandy real estate question of the day. Ayuk for the 17th pick, yay or nay, knowing the contract that's got to follow. We'll discuss and debate on the other side. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Dylan Denmark. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Ooh, we down to it, Tony. Last 5 minutes of the program. Today, XL Primetime coming your way. Big Meech, Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times Union, stops by tomorrow to talk all things Jaguar football related. Pockets, have you done a bracket for the tournament?
I did one Monday.
Okay, Tony, have you done a bracket?
Nope.
I think it's kind of obligatory.
Yeah.
Let's all do one by noon tomorrow.
I mean, I will, but...
Well, I'm just saying. Let's make sure we have one done for the show tomorrow, and we'll throw out our picks. Yeah, it's just kind of the ritual of being an American sports fan, right? I mean, you got to have a bracket.
I've almost won the competition here in-house at the station the last couple years. 2 years ago, it came down to who won the final. Was going to determine whether or not I won or lost the bracket. Last year, it was Final Four before I was eliminated in the competition. I've been close the last couple of years despite my 30 seconds of watching college basketball before I fill out the bracket.
About 20 years ago, I picked the Final Four completely correct. And I'm like, I'm good at this. I'm really good at picking basketball.
Start gambling your checks.
Especially pockets when I don't watch any throughout the season. And then I all of a sudden I go, oh, I remember when Villanova was good. They'll probably win this game. So I don't know. I hear UConn's good again. So I
go they seem to be the popular pick. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So let's look at today's question of the day and give it a little 10-10 take.
10-10
take.
Now, Mike Dempsey's 10-10 take, brought to you by Leonard Truck Accessories.
I'm a no on this, but and maybe, you know, you look at it. Some people have made the suggestion, look, if you're going to go this route, why don't you go crazy and make an offer for Justin Jefferson? I give up a 17 pick for Justin Jefferson. I don't feel Ayuk's the same guy as Justin Jefferson. I think he's really good. Paying him as a top 10 guy might be a bit of an overpay, but not tremendously, because he does things like you're paying Jefferson to get 180 targets, catch 115 passes for 1,700 yards and scored a million touchdowns and all these things when he's healthy.
Yeah.
You're paying Ayuk to be a 1,300-yard receiver, maybe score 10 touchdowns and a lot of that, but you're also paying him for the physicality that he brings. He is a great run-blocking wide receiver. But regardless, I would pay the 17th pick for Ja'Marr Chase or Justin Jefferson. I'd pay more for that guy. So I guess you could look at it from that standpoint. Like, would I give this year's first and next year's first for Justin Jefferson and a $30 million a year contract? I would. Yep. I don't think that would even get it done. So why wouldn't I be willing to spend the 17th pick on Brandon Ayuk?
Yeah.
Is he half the player Justin Jefferson is? You know, from that standpoint, that's probably the best argument, but I still am coming down on the side of give me a shot at Brian Thomas or one of these other receivers, even if it's at the 48th pick in the draft, and be able to pay them pennies on the dollar.
I think we talked about it a lot with Josh Allen and where I thought things would land with the whole thing, right? Waiting to see what's going to happen with Hunter and Burns, right? Needed to see what that was going to happen with the new money. What does that look like? Well, this offseason has given you no idea what that looks like at wide receiver. None.
No.
Right? With Michael Pittman Jr. and Calvin Ridley being the two top of the market guys, right, that got new deals in this offseason. You go look at, you know, what wide receivers are getting paid and when they sign their contracts. Tyreek Hill, 2022. Devontae Adams, 2022. Cooper Kupp, 2022. A.J. Brown, 22. Diggs, 22. Metcalf, 22. Samuel, 22. None of that's new money, right? So trying to figure out exactly what Ayuk looks like compared to what should the next number be for these guys is why I'm comfortable even with the Ayuk deal. If it means I got to pay him $27 million, fine. Because I think by the time all those guys and that next wave of guys get all their money, Ayuk's going to be right around 5, 6, 7 among those guys. And I'm comfortable making him a top 10 paid wide receiver in the league and giving up the 17th pick. But as we've said since we brought it up yesterday on the show, I understand the arguments against it. That would be my argument for it is I'm more comfortable with it than it appears the team is with that kind of thing, but I can understand why you wouldn't be.
60-40 against right now. And there's some vehement, like, absolutely or absolutely not, like, on both sides. How you have to be crazy to even consider the other side. This is not one that I feel that way at all about.
I get your point, too.
Like, I'm trying to argue myself into it, thinking I'd do it for Chase, I'd do it for Jefferson, you know, I'd do it for the right guy, but there are...
And those guys are going to get north of Tyreek. When those deals get done, they're going to get well north of 30.
But I think they are – I think there's a clear tier of elite receivers. I think Tyreek Hill's in there, but because of the age and his flirtation with retirement talk, that I wouldn't be making that kind of move for him at this stage. But I don't think Ayuk's in that tier. That's me.
I'd have to go back and look. When Buffalo got Stephon Diggs and they gave him that contract, where was it? Right, among wide receivers. I'd have to go back and look at the history of that, where exactly that put him at that point in time, because that's more the Ayuk comparison for me.
All right, almost 600 votes on this. Just over 60% say no, it's too much. Yes, it'd be worth the first rounder and the contract for Brandon Ayuk. If you haven't voted yet, please do so. At MD_1010XL on X. Let's say hello to XL Primetime. Mia, you mentioned in your tweet a couple days ago now, I think it was, that the asking price for Brandon Ayuk is the 17th pick in the draft. What do you think the price would be that the Jags would say, okay, I'll do that and the contract on top of it that you know has to follow? Would it be a swap of first-rounders? Would it be the 48th pick in the draft? Would it be something else?
I haven't pitched that to anyone. I would think the second round pick, perhaps, maybe that opens some things up. We obviously know, and trust me, I was just as surprised as you guys when I heard that Zay Jones was included in a possible trade.
See, that doesn't surprise me. Does that surprise you?
It was more so just like he's in an expiring contract year, which I understand Ayuk's in a contract year.
It surprised me that San Fran would want him,
but
maybe not, because
they want a veteran wide receiver.
Right, we're going to plug that hole. It's not, right. And from the Jags' perspective, we didn't even include that in our question today, because the feeling was if they signed Ridley, Zay would probably be a cap casualty. And even if he wasn't included in the trade package.
Which was widely known.
Right. So if Ayuk were to get traded here, Zay would be a cap casualty. So if you're going to go ahead and include him, the fact that they put a value on him coming back, and I get it. You know, you still want, give me the piece rather than making us go out there. I don't think that moves the needle a whole lot.
I think the reason that the Jaguars balked at And by the way, for clarification, was not a pick swap. It would have been pick 17.
Correct.
San Francisco retains pick 31.
Correct.
And so that's where I think the Jaguars balked, because they recognize they have more needs than just a wide receiver, which certainly bringing in a top 10 wide receiver could elevate all boats. But at the same time, you really haven't addressed your defensive front outside of Arik Armstead in free agency. And certainly you signed Travis Gibson, who's good depth on the edge, but you still have some pieces you could probably add there with that 17th overall pick, depending how the board falls. And that's not including, of course, the corner conversation. Now,
or
I think
just the wide receiver conversation. If you go
that.
Because you're paying whoever you get there, you're paying them less for the entirety of that rookie deal than Ayuk's going to want for one season.
Yes.
So, you know, and you can say that the cap is fake and there are ways to maneuver it, but there's a finite, there's an end point to it.
Right.
It doesn't, you can't just do this and push money forever. Eventually the bill comes due. So if you're paying Ayuk this, and I'll pay him this, you better be, you know, like you say, you got, I mean, you're, where are you going to find the cheap labor from, you know?
And by the way, look, again, I was just as surprised as all y'all when I was informed of more details regarding, first off, when I first got the call about the smoke that the Jaguars had expressed interest in Ayuk's camp, not the 49ers, Ayuk's camp had expressed interest. I was just as surprised as everyone. I was equally surprised when I was told what the compensation potentially floated was. But now this news yesterday, number one, of the Steelers' interest, and number two, the fact that Brandon Ayuk himself is out here tweeting at Mike Tomlin. Mm-hmm. Anyone who still thinks that this is a media fabrication, he and his agency are trying to, yes, get money, whether that's from San Francisco
right,
or somewhere
he wants to get
else.
Paid.
You cannot dismiss it anymore. Yeah, that's
it's real.
It's very real.
Yeah.
And trust me, again, 8 days ago, I was just like the rest of y'all. I had no idea that this would be something that I'd have San Francisco Niner fans and media members angrily tweeting at me about, but it's reality.
Would you trade the 17th pick for Brandon Ayuk?
I would not. I would trade the 48th pick.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anybody who wouldn't.
I think he's a first-round I think he's a first-round talent. Now, I don't think the Jaguars are in a position to give up that 17th overall pick. I think they're not going to address wide receiver with it unless, in a crazy world, Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers was to fall to you there. I believe if the Jaguars were to be active in this Brandon Ayuk market, I don't want to say it, but I'm going to, maybe a similar elevator situation to the Calvin Ridley trade with the Atlanta Falcons, where you give up the second this year, maybe a third if you don't sign him, or a fourth if you don't sign him the following year, or next year's third or second, something like that. If you could get creative with it and part with two day two picks, maybe
that's
equals
a lot,
a
though,
one.
For a rental. To me, for a
but
potential
if you sign
rental.
Him, right.
Well, if you
yeah.
sign him.
Right.
If. Right, he's got to cooperate
curious,
on that
big,
as well.
Yeah, big picture, I'm very curious if Trent Baalke's ever going to engage in something quite like that again. Like, what?
I don't fault him for doing it.
I don't either.
I didn't fault him then. I'm not going to fault him in the aftermath. You know, I'm not going to pull. You know, I think it was worth the roll of the dice.
Yep. Right, and that's what I would. You know, we always say on primetime that, you know, we're going to get shirts that say "Live life with no regrets," because that's what Trent Baalke says. But I am genuinely curious what his thought now in hindsight was of that deal.
But
I think it was still a deal you had to make.
It was a fourth and a fifth with escalators.
Yes.
We were talking about maybe a second and a third with escalators. And that's now you're talking about, you know, Tony, the core of your team.
And I think
you're building.
Ayuk is a high enough quality player that you make the deal because you've already talked to his side and said, this is what the offer is going to be. Is this good? Like, I think that's when you make the offer. This is what we're willing to give San Francisco. This is what we're willing to give you. Deal's done, right? The moment he walks in here, they're not waiting to see next offseason what's going to happen with Ayuk. He's signing it the day he gets traded here. If he gets traded here, would be the way that's more how the NFL has traditionally worked.
That is how I would want to do it. Yeah. All right, Mia, what do you guys have coming up?
Oh, we got Matthew Driscoll joining us, 12:40. Let's go, folks. We will do tons of bracket talk. Yes, Virginia basketball equals Iowa football. If you didn't watch that game, thank yourself that you didn't have to sit through it last night in the first four. We also are going to talk some numbers and cents when it comes to the latest deals, television deals with the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC. Maybe we're starting to put the puzzle pieces together about how and why Clemson and Florida State and some other ACC schools may be able to get out of that grantor rights deal.
All right, we'll be listening. Thanks,
Thank
Mia.
You.
Next 3 hours, XL Primetime. That'll do it for us today. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by. Demetrius Harvey will do the same tomorrow from the Florida Times Union for Tony Smith and Dylan Denmark. I'm Mike Dempsey. Have a great afternoon, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow from 10 to noon with more Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.